2004 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 317, Remembering Jay Bell and Helping Preserve His Legacy. A panel featuring Brent Pace, David Moulton, and Jed Brubaker.
Ah, okay, great. Great. Okay. Welcome everyone to this session 317 of the Sunstone 2004 Symposium. This is a session remembering Jay Bell and helping preserve his legacy. My name is Hugo Olayas. I write the news section for Sunstone magazine, and I'm delighted that you are all here. I know that you all knew Jay, and we have things to share about him. First, I am going to read a two-minute thing, and then I'm going to turn the time over to others. And I apologize because the first two paragraphs are something that I read before, and some of you may have heard. Jay Bell was the biggest gossip I ever met. Any gossip Jay would hear or read about, he would store it in his memory, like a French monk stores a bottle of fine champagne in the cellar. And just like a bottle of champagne, every once in a while he would spin the story a quarter of a turn till it would finally begin to ferment. By the time Jay was ready to share it with others, the story had always gone from flat to fizz. It had become effervescent. Jay never did this with malice. As a matter of fact, I don't think I ever met a guy more deprived of malice. But you see, Jay was like a child with a powerful imagination. On two or three occasions, Jay told me that Mormon historian Michael Quinn was, strictly for research purposes, was interviewing a number of gay Mormon porn actors living in the LA area. I thought the story was ridiculous, but how could I argue with Jay? Then 1 year ago, I was having dinner with Michael Quinn in LA, and I asked him about these interviews with gay Mormon porn actors. Brothers and sisters, I'm sorry to inform you that Michael Quinn has never interviewed any gay Mormon porn actor, neither in LA nor in any other part. He did once receive a tip about a gay porn actor who claimed to be LDS. Michael Quinn sent this guy an email. The guy never replied. That should have been the end of the story, right? But that's exactly when the bottle of champagne begins to spin. That's when the magic takes place. Jay's stories may not have been always uplifting or inspiring or even true, but his stories were colorful and entertaining, and that's why we love to hear them. It is ironic that this Jay is the same person who was so detailed, laborious, and meticulous in doing research. Despite my complete lack of confidence in his tall tales, I had a lot of admiration for Jay's research. In the mid-1980s, years before the internet, Jay belonged to a group known as the Xerox Priests. The Xerox Priests was an underground group of BYU students who spent hours photocopying the Mormon historical materials that were emerging in those days. Jay was perpetually collecting documents and sharing them with those who asked for a copy. Jay showed his ability to do primary research in an article published in the spring 1994 issue of the Journal of Mormon History. But in the late 90s, he changed the focus of his research and decided to focus almost exclusively on materials related to gay Mormon history. Jay did extensive research at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City and the One Institute and Archives in Los Angeles. The last year of his life, he was a permanent fixture at the Church Historical Library in Temple Square and the Special Collections at the Marriott Library. Jay's concern for the preservation of gay Mormon history led him to, in the year 2000, to start the Affirmation Collection at the Marriott Library. He also worked with Ben Williams, who is sitting right here, to start a similar collection, just not Mormon, but just a collection of gay Utah history. Jay loved to share with others the fruits of his research. He wrote several articles for the Affirmation website, but especially he composed a CD-ROM that he willingly shared free of charge with interested parties. Only days after Jay's passing, the Executive Committee of Affirmation, Gay and Lesbian Mormons announced the creation of the J. Bell Fund for Gay Mormon Studies. The purpose of this fund is twofold. First, to support the scholarly research and writing necessary to combat ignorance, intolerance, and bigotry. And second, to preserve GLBT Mormon experience and history. Affirmation has also created an improved version of Jay's CD-ROM. This new version contains all the information of the original CD-ROM, plus an index, plus all the articles that Jay Bell wrote for Affirmation. We have right here, right? Some 20 copies. Duane has some copies of Jay's new CD-ROM. Anyone interested in a copy, we are asking for a donation of at least $10. Five? I told you five? Ten is fine? Okay. All the funds collected for this will go to the Jay Bell Fund for Gay Mormon Studies. Jay's CD-ROM is not exclusively dedicated to gay Mormon history, but to GLBT studies in general. However, I do believe that the most valuable section of the CD-ROM is the one on gay Mormon studies. It contains the compilations of some 130 documents and articles related to homosexuality in the LDS Church and in the Community of Christ. I acknowledge the presence of Norma Ashton, a cousin of Jay Bell. I would like everyone to, probably most of you know Jay, and I would like everyone to say something. However, we are going to start with those who are officially in the program. Brent Pace. Okay, here I don't have anything about you. But Brent works with teenagers, right? And is a social worker, is that correct? He's a licensed social worker and works with teenagers and knew Jay very well. I think Jay was mentor of some of the people who are going to be speaking today. Jeffrey Baker lived with Jay and considers himself a surrogate son of Jay Bell. And
I'm speaking on behalf of David Knowlton.
David Knowlton could not make it. He's in Bolivia as we speak, but he's emailed some remarks. I forgot your first name.
I'm James.
James Pate. And James is... why don't we start with James? And then we are going to move to Jed and Brent, and then hopefully, if we are all brief, I think we can all say something. And I would love to hear from everyone, including Norma and Ben Williams and Paul and Duane and all the friends that I see here.
Run a little bit this way. Okay. Surfing Information and Making Waves, Edward J. Bell by David Clark Knowlton. Last year at this time, Jay introduced me to the Sunstone audience with grace and wit. I had just returned from South America to give my paper, and it was a delight to be welcomed home by his words. This year, Jay is with us in spirit rather than in body, with all its punishing meanings as if you know Jay. I am in South America and leave this paper to honor him, to thank him, and to recognize his work and importance. To me, Jay was primarily a friend. He was someone who would call and say, "Hey, David, I just found a great book," or "Have you heard about..." His laugh was engaging and enthusiastic, even when he was struggling. One New Year's Eve, some friends, Jay, and I went clubbing to ring in the new year. It happened that January 1st is also my birthday. When I was gone from the table for a few minutes, Jay called my home phone with all the noise of the club around him and had everyone at the table wish me a happy birthday. I was stunned at the thoughtfulness the next afternoon when I picked up my messages. Jay and I spent hours talking on the phone and saw many movies together. Whenever we would have dinner at my house, Jay was there with his pies. This year, his absence has been noticed every time people have gathered at my house. I miss his phone calls and friendship. That is irreplaceable. But my purpose here is not to eulogize him as a friend, but to speak to Jay, the scholar, and Jay, the gatherer of information. Jay surfed the curling waves of information. He spent a lot of time in the ocean of life's forgotten details, waiting to catch a wave. The thrill of the perfect story, fact, or archival trove filled him with adrenaline. Before it, he would chuckle as he paddled his archivist board and felt it lift him to the wave's crest. Surfers of the world may agree on what a great wave is. They know where they are found. Maybe Bell's Beach, Jeffreys Bay, Mavericks, California, and Vanuatu. But someone who surfs the waves of information has to have an issue or a concern to help them see the waves as they approach. For Jay, the issue was dual and both personal, homosexuality and Mormonism. Both of these areas are subject of an increasing body of scholarly and popular literature and culture. Jay worked the in-between areas. His research, his writing, and his tabulation of information are useful to scholars of both areas, and they help us understand where these two important groups, gays and Mormons, cross paths or journeys for a while together. Since this is primarily a Mormon forum, I think it is important to note that Jay's work on homosexuality, gay Mormons, is not just a contribution to gay studies, but an important contribution to Mormon studies. In this we find the concern of who is and who is not a Mormon. Jay's work stems from the notion that Mormons, like gays, are a community. People are born Mormon or convert to it, but they stay Mormon their entire lives, whether they are active in the church or not, whether their membership is on the church rolls or not. This is an issue of indelible identity, a kind of permanence that marks someone as having interest for a scholar as more than an individual. This kind of identity has existence and transcendence beyond the individual, but it can never erase the individual with his own name, experience, and story. While this notion of transcendence of primordial identities has ideological importance, in Jay's thought, it is not the work of an ideologue who makes a political argument and invokes a community for ends of power of one sort or another. Rather, it is the idea of a native Mormon well-schooled in that ideology, who, although his sexuality and intellectuality raised tension with the mainstream of his society, remains strongly identified with the Mormon community as if it were an ethnic group. Armand Maas has challenged this notion of Mormon ethnic identity, arguing there is no substance to it, but Jay and Jay's work, among that of many others, exemplify, along with the scholarly arguments of Patricia Limerick, that there is a strong ethnic sense in Mormonism for many Latter-day Saints. This includes the lives of many gay Mormons whose experiences are archived in Jay's chronologies, archives, and writings. When Jay created his chronology of Mormons and gays, he did so in a way that substantiates the notion of Mormonists as a transcendent and transtemporal identity that is not limited to membership in the formal church. It is something that belongs to people who form a community and talk with each other. Like Jay and his cell phone, he maintained contact with a huge list of people through constant phone calls, accessing in the process a wide range of Mormon experience. Instead, his work documents a tension between the church and the Mormon, or even Latter-day Saint, community. In fact, his work provides a primary source for understanding one of the major tensions between church and community of current life. One must grasp this to comprehend the form of contemporary Mormon institutions take and how Latter-day Saints build their lives with the conflicts as part of them. Interestingly, the anthropologist Gilbert Hurd has argued that gays increasingly form an ethnic group in the United States. Gays identify as primary and is held to be anchored in biology. Just as Latter-day Saint ethnicity is classified located in kinship in the family, as Douglas Davies has cogently argued, the wealth of gay publications, websites, plays and movies, as well as bars and coffee houses, give substance to this notion, even as LDS congregations, movies, novels, websites, etc., give substance to Mormonism. Gay studies are an increasingly important area of scholarship and, if nothing else, have challenged the universal notion of sexuality and gender that the Church pushes in the proclamation of the family. Jay's work contributes to documenting the history of this ethnicity within Mormon community. At the same time, it contributes to documenting the place of Mormons within the broader gay community. Just like many people, Jay was excited by the openings for gay marriage that were brought to North America by the Canadian Court and by the Supreme Court of Massachusetts. He had already followed and documented with concern the increasing involvement of Mormon leadership in efforts to prevent and prohibit gay marriage. Jay had experienced the impact of sharpening of Mormon rhetoric, which he documented, on the gay issue. At the same time, he and his friends were affected by this ever harsher language and activity. Jay also witnessed the growth of a gay community that came out of the closet both nationally and among the Mormon community to stand up with pride and claim its humanity and right to exist legitimately despite the fierce language that attempted to erase it. Jay was of a generation that tended to be slow in coming out, particularly if they had a strong connection with the LDS Church and its society. Nevertheless, he documented changes whereby younger and younger Latter-day Saints are coming out and proudly claiming gay identity as primary. For many, their Mormonness retreats into the background, like a bit of historical color, rather than claiming primacy in itself. While many still stay in the closet and resist their sexuality and the calls to acknowledge it as who they are, many, very many others come out. Like others, Jay was fascinated with the development of organizations, or anti-organizations as the case may be, for young gay Latter-day Saints who are gay. A different world has been born for gays. Although there is a backlash, a brutal, vicious, nasty backlash, still, Latter-day Saints explore their sexuality and give meaning to it with a very different set of possibilities than were possible when Jay was young. And the future is hopeful. Young people, according to surveys, are very accepting of gays. But the world has also changed for the self-styled Orthodox. The family is not the same. Gender is not the same. Sex and sexuality are not the same. The Orthodox also have to define themselves in a world where religion, particularly conservative or fundamentalist religions, have new weight and import as a transnational social movement whose holding to so-called fundamentals or even so-called revealed truths stand to many for a need to resist some of the changes brought by globalization and global culture change. If religions are the basis for social movements the world over, and if Mormonism has a large number of faithful outside the United States than with a larger number of faithful outside the United States than within it, gays are also becoming transnational. In one way, there have always been people who preferred romance, intimacy, and sex with people of their own gender, but now their identities are increasingly less influenced by local histories and local cultures, but by the global spread of gay as a culture and identity. These are the waves of information that Jay surfed. Not only did he ride them in his own life, but he collected them and organized them in a way others could also access. He has left a body of work that will be of importance for scholars who wish to comprehend this time of major change in the world, where religion and sexuality have become two of the critical forces of evolution. Jay's archives and writings will also be useful for Latter-day Saints, gay and straight, who need mirrors of other experience to reflect back to them, means of comparing and contrasting their own lives to make sense of them. Information is many things, including a constant shifting wave. Jay has performed an important act in his work. During the hours he sat before texts and before his computer, barely able to see the scribblings, even with the magnification. He has left us resources for understanding. Personally, though, I shall remember his best as a friend, one of those rare beings who carry your souls in his hands. For his scholarship, I admire him, and for his friendship, I will always remember him and carry his memory in my heart.
Who should I pass the mic to? You're probably going to need a short cord.
Hi, everyone. My name's Jed Brubaker, for those of you who don't know me. David Knowlton via James did a really good job about talking about Jay as a scholar and whatnot, and while I was definitely aware of that part of his life, I think the greater impact that he had on me was, you know, in a much more mentoring, parental figure. But, you know, as I was listening to what James was reading, it was really interesting for me to recall and sort of recognize the way that Jay's own scholarly aspirations have had an influence on me. So we'll go through my scribblings. I was actually really glad when Hugo called me, because I think last winter I was a little too shell-shocked to, I don't know, be brave enough to sort of talk about what was going on and what it was like for me. So, I don't know, this is like a unique opportunity to grab it, and so he's just going to have to put up with me. For those of you who don't know, I do a lot of behavioral research on coming out and coming out stories. And since we are all here in Salt Lake, that inevitably means Mormon gay coming out stories, at least most of the time. And so I've heard lots and lots and lots of stories. And one of the things I hear very, very often is about how young gay men navigate this transition from their adolescent life into their adult gay life, and there's this sort of rift that they have to cross, and that they don't know how really to interact with an adult gay community as a gay teenager. And I hear many, many stories that unfortunately could be better, where they don't get the support that they need, or something doesn't. There's just, you know, they're coming out and they're Mormon. There's not the support they need. However, that's not my story, and you know, I'm really blessed, and it's actually all due to Jay. I met Jay when I was 16, and I had just, you know, a son of a bishop, just escaped reparative therapy. I fired my therapist and ended up at a 4th of July party. And you know, it was so interesting, because on the one hand, there were all these people who were out, and it was like my first, you know, gay experience. But on the other hand, there was this figure in the shadows making sure that everything went okay. And that was Jay. He was always watching out for everything. I didn't even realize this until long afterwards, that he was making sure that the right people were near me and the wrong people were not. There are a number of occasions that I could mention where he, you know, carefully steered me away from, you know, individual X, or said, you know, told individual Y to go away. And you know, I'm thankful for that. Yeah, he always took risks for me. I remember when I turned 18, he said, "Oh, thank God." He said, "I was so terrified that your parents were just going to come see me or something." There was this one time in particular when I dropped by for a visit, and I happened to have he must have been 7 years old at the time, maybe six, my six-year-old little brother, and I was just swinging by, and it wasn't going to be a big deal or whatnot, and my parents came up to me the next day, and apparently my little brother Jonathan was talking about this nude man he had seen, and Jay and I both were terrified until, like, 6 months later we realized that he has a statue of David. And my parents, I think, I don't know, he's one of those gays. Anyone who's ever been around Jay always knows how he was all about the information, surfing the waves, and always sharing it with anything. And I think, you know, I could contribute maybe a bit of my inquisitive nature to that. We're always questioning everything. And I remember there was a period of time when I lived with Jay, and he would always somehow goad me into staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning, talking, even when I had school the next day. And I don't know. On the one hand, you hate him, but you have to love him. So mostly I hated him the next morning, but I loved the conversations. There was one time in particular that I am awfully fond of. Like most seniors in Utah who are going to seminary, you get disenchanted with seminary. I was disenchanted for other reasons than I think other seniors were. But nevertheless, all seniors stopped going. This being said, I was the son of the bishop, and I was supposed to get straight A's in seminary, and so I had to do makeup. Makeup in seminaries these days is writing a paper. And so I wanted to do something that wasn't cheesy and quoting 3 Nephi. I wanted to do something that, you know, maybe had some substance to it. And so Jay and I talked this over, and I think within 2 weeks, largely aided by endless dialogue articles, I had an accounting of the racist policies of the LDS Church. It was great paper, talking about all the roots of, you know, how racism developed and, you know, and how blacks couldn't have the priesthood. I thought it was a great paper. I got an A in the class, but I don't think my seminary teacher was too thrilled. Among anything else, Jay was always there for anyone who ever needed a hand. As I said, when I lived with him for a summer, what had happened is that I'd, you know, moved away for junior college, and when I, you know, talked to my parents about moving home, they said, "That's fine, but nothing gay is allowed in our house." And on the phone, I said, "You realize that means that I'm not allowed in your house." And they said, "Well, then you can't come home." And you know what? That was okay, because I had a home. And so I stayed with Jay for the summer, where he kept me up till 2 o'clock in the morning and thankfully didn't have too much of an impact on my grades for the summer's coursework. Jay was always there for every single major part of my adult or my older adolescence and adult life, any major thing that happened, any relationship, always there to talk about. And I knew that things were good when I met my partner Josh, because Jay approved. Sometimes when people die, the people they leave behind are left with ambiguities about what they could have done differently, or on what terms did we leave, or, you know, just they have those apprehensions. I feel really, really fortunate that I don't have that with Jay. The last time I spent a lot of time with Jay was about a year ago at the Affirmation Conference. I had been asked to give a presentation to those scary older gay men about how to not be scary to the younger gay men, and was thrilled when Jay called me up out of the blue and said that he was going to be the moderator for the session. What I didn't expect was when he got up, well, I was honored. I mean, he stood up and talked about how it was his pleasure to know me. It was my pleasure to know him, but nevertheless, he said it was his pleasure to know me, and that he got to see me go all the way through, and that above all, he was really proud of me. I don't have to worry about what things could have been like, because I already know what they were. That was my experience of Jay. Great mentor. Someone who steps beyond a mentor. Maybe that's why I claim the, you know, surrogate son. Someone who was always there, always calling him on his cell phone. All of us who knew Jay, I can guarantee our lives were better. Thanks.
That's a hard thing to follow. I mean, listening to David Knowlton's work and his writing, and listening to you, Jed. My name's Brent Pace, and I met Jay many years ago when I was living at home after I'd returned from living on the East Coast, and I was staying in my parents' home for a few weeks until I could decide what to do. And my father had sat down with me on several occasions and talked to me about Sodom and Gomorrah in an effort to make me understand how vile my nature was, I think. And, you know, to his credit, he wouldn't just talk to me alone. He always had my mother present and the scriptures opened in front of him. And so one day, Gary and Millie Watts called me and said that they wanted to take me to Salt Lake for some kind of presentation. And, I don't even remember what it was, but I remember getting in the back of their Lexus and having them say, "This is Jay Bell." And, you know, I learned later that they were trying to set us up and be matchmakers. And the remarkable thing that ended up happening from that encounter was that I talked to him about what my experience was at home, and he said, "Oh, George." And I said, "Oh, you know my dad?" And he said, "Oh, yes, I've had many conversations with George. And, you know, come live with me." And I don't know how many people here have the same experience, but Jay saved my life. I mean, he really did at a time, he walked into my life at a time when I really needed someone to say, you know what, I understand that side. I understand where your father's coming from. I understand his anger and his rage, because I've been there too, and I've watched it, and I've been a friend of your father's, and I also know that you need to step away from that, and I'm offering that to you. And so when I listen to David's wonderful writing, I think of Jay as the researcher and an amazing commitment that he had to spending time just gathering information and sharing information, but the many, many hours that he spent in front of the computer, even though he could barely read what he was reading. And I think of him as the mentor, which he was to me, and certainly to many people, but then I also think of him as a man who just inspired me to be a different person. And I don't want to take a lot of time, because I think there's a lot of people here who could share experiences about Jay. I do want to say a couple of things, a couple of anecdotes. When he was still living in Orem, he left BYU and was working on coming out, and as he decided to come out, he was a little bit awkward in his gayness, and I think that there was a part of him that really wanted to be a little flamboyant. And I don't know if anybody knows Jay, but there was a certain flamboyance that was, let me try this on, and then he'd back up and say, oh, I don't know about that. And then he'd try it again, and we had a term for him, which was nouveau gay. And we would just say, well, that's Jay's nouveau gay side. And he told us this story where he was in Orem, Utah, and had gone in, was with a friend, and he had gone in to buy this cake for somebody's birthday party. And he got separated from his friend. And he buys this cake and he puts it up on his fingers as though he's a waiter of some sort. And he said, I was sashaying across the parking lot. Just really, just, you know, very flamboyant. And I was feeling wonderful about myself. And I was moving my hips back and forth. And I came out of the store and walked across the parking lot. And I got into the car and sat down and I looked over and this person screamed, and it wasn't the person's car that I thought it was. And he said they just must have thought, oh my God, what's this person doing? And he got out of the car, and he was apologizing, and he went over to another car, and he went to open the door and realized that wasn't the right car either, and he eventually found the car. And you know, the thing that was so amazing about Jay is that his eyesight to me was never a handicap. I mean, he always had this remarkable, of course, irony of being able to see better than most people. But he was able to laugh at himself. The remarkable thing, too, was that Jay was always, always available. And there were moments when I would just be desperate about something or having a really rough time, and he would always answer his phone. And one night I remember calling him, and it was about 8:30 at night. I called him on his cell phone, and I hear this, hello. And I said, Jay? And he said, yes. I said, why are you whispering? He said, I'm at the opera. I said, then hang up your damn phone. And it was just amazing how he would answer the phone at all times. The other thing that Jay, you know, and I remember this about him, was that he had certain characteristics that were really delightful. But when we, you know, when I was asked to talk about this, people, you know, especially Dan, wanted us to talk about his legacy. And I think David really, you know, in his way, just stated the power of Jay's life and the legacy that he leaves. And Jed, in talking about his sort of rescuing you at a young age, and I remember meeting you and telling you that I was only gay on Thursdays, and having some of those experiences in meeting you and recognizing that Jay had this amazing way of connecting people. And then, since Jay's death, the fact that so many people have come to me and shared experiences, and I remember going to his funeral and looking around and going, my gosh, these are people I would never associate with, but Jay was the hub. You know, I'd look over and see BYU professors and my father who loved Jay, who showed up to the funeral, and then, you know, all of the people that I looked around and realized that these were people that I would never probably associate with, but Jay never made a distinction. He never made any judgment about these people. So what I would like to leave with you, if you don't mind and if you would indulge me, is the one thing that Jay used to just, you know, always talk to me about was how much he loved my poetry. And so I sat down several nights ago and I worked on a poem that I wanted to leave you with and Jay with. And so I'm just going to read it. And some of it, I hope you appreciate, is some very raw feeling that I still have about Jay's death and how painful that was to see him the way he was. This poem is called Another Blue Picasso. When you were gone, I thought of what we had not said, what I hadn't told you en route to Ralphie's Mexican joint. I should have told you that Picasso, too, had a period they called blue. Have you seen the tragedy, the family at sea, the father's foot bent back, just so as though kicking against the roiling sea? I think you would have known the heft of that last geste de l'homme commun. Were we nothing but common? When you tittered and sashayed, we called you nouveau gay. You were a drama queen to leave us so tragic, head in a bleeding turban, and your belly sliced open wide to slow the swelling. Damn, Jay, I just kept saying damn, but of course you left this way. They said you entered slyly quiet, living in an incubator with a light bulb, brothers clanging tiny bells to wake you at the bottle when you snoozed. You failed at first to thrive. Well, I'd have clipped bells to your dying toes if I hadn't been so mad. Didn't you see, I'd asked, didn't you see the end coming fast as 100 angry breeders down 13th East? You heard a final bell. You stopped, forgot to look. You failed to move. You somehow knew that it was time to slip back to sleep. If you'd come today, I'd tell you all about the raindrops on the skylight when those crazy boys of mine had an epiphany at last, saying, hey, it's just like finding all those lost Picassos. No, the rain was more like tiny drums reaching us like heartbeats from your father's grave at your Death Valley home. Alongside the ashes we never spread, where you met the smiling Prophet Joseph, wrapped up in rainbow love. Thanks. I'm going to pass this around for people who want to share, and maybe I can move out of this chair if this doesn't reach.
Maybe we can reach with the microphone.
I hope you will use the
I would love to have an emailed copy of David's essay for the affirmation website at least.
Email David and make sure that's okay. I'm sure it's fine, but I'll fill in the information and then I'll send it on to you.
We have till 9:45. We have about 20 minutes. I would like Ben to say a few words. Ben has done for Gay Utah. Ben has done for Gay Utah what Jay was doing for Gay Mormons, and they work together. I would like him to say a few words, and I would love to hear a few words from Norma. I'm sure that she can talk about Jay from as a cousin in a family kind of setting, if it's okay with her. Yes.
I'm going to send around a piece of paper. Please, if you don't mind, sign your name and your email address. We'd like to create a bell net. Some of us are too isolated. I live in Honolulu, and I needed Jay to keep me in touch with many people, some here and some not. But I'd like to get this started, and you can copy just the addresses. Oh, into your email box and post it to all of us or whatever.
Thank you, James Cartwright from Hawaii.
Hi, I wasn't prepared to speak, but my name is Ben Williams, and I'm the director of the Utah Stonewall Historical Society, which is to say that we gather everything about Utah that's gay, so it does include a lot of Mormon history. I have to say that I was not a friend of J. Bill in a personal sense. Jay sought me out when he found that the archives that we had collected for the Utah Stonewall Center had been basically filed away somewhere, and he was desperately interested in getting those archives back out into the public. And he called me one time, and I wasn't really sure who he was. I kind of dropped out of affirmation probably in the early 90s, and so a lot of the associations I had with people from back there had changed, or they had moved away, or even had died. So, and also at that time, I was quite bitter that my archives had been taken away from me and buried away somewhere. So I had not pursued it. But Jay, in his way, he went to the board of directors of the Gay and Lesbian Community Center and talked them into getting control of those archives. And then he went up to the Marriott Library, and he met with Stan Larson and agreed to take those archives. And he called me up and said, let's go get them. And so it was amazing that he did all this himself, and all I had to do is go and get all the boxes. So we spent one hot summer day going in this dusty old storage shed and pulling out about 36 or 37 boxes of archival material that I had been collecting for probably about 20 years, and had them donated to the Marriott Library. Needless to say that Jay spearheaded a lot of this. I would not have done this on my own. I would have said the hell with it, you know, and just, you know, bitter and all this stuff. And I was already discovering a lot of the information, or putting it on a website and putting it on my hard drive so they could never be taken away from me again. And so after that, Jay and I became colleagues, because I'm finding that while the gay community is small, the gay Mormon community is even smaller, and the gay Mormon historian community is smallest yet. And between Rocky O'Donovan and Michael Quinn and myself and Jay Bell, I knew very little people that were doing any such things, original research and chronologizing the history of Utah and gays within the Mormon culture here in Utah. So Jay and I became gossip buddies, I guess, more than anything else. He'd find something, he'd share with me. I'd tell him what I found, I'd share with him. We had more of an intellectual understanding of each other, I think, than some people might have, because I knew what it was like to spend hours and hours and hours in a microfilm, you know, and just reading things from, you know, 1910 and barely trying to make it out and copying it down, and excited as could be about it, to share that with someone. And I knew that Jay had that excitement too, that he knew that history was like a time machine for us. It's a way to escape and also go back into the past and become part of the past. But Jay had a interest in sharing it, as I do, a passion to share what we were learning with other people. It overwhelmed Jay, I know, from discussing it. He could never share as much as he was finding. He could not share it fast enough. He couldn't write it down fast enough. He couldn't compile it. He had an urgency to do this, and so do I. One of the reasons I'm kind of obsessed with this and I'm not really doing much in the gay community anymore is because of, you know, 50 years from now, to tell a different story than the story that we were telling ourselves now, that we needed to document our lives and our stories and our histories. Fortunately, the LDS background compels us to record our lives. Probably most of you keep journals or something that you write, or you preserve things. You know, you just won't throw anything away. Well, that's kind of a blessing for the gay community in Utah, because we don't throw anything away. The bad thing is that we have no place to put it. And people call me up all the time, and Jay would too, and say, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want that? And if I took everything that everybody wants to give me, I'd have no room for anything else. And the things that Jay had shared with me and collected, I posted on, we have a Yahoo group site. It's not really a website, it's a Yahoo group site that anyone can join. It's called the Utah Stonewall Historical Group site. And it's postings of gay history, Utah gay history, it's discussions of things, it's things that I'm writing. This Friday in the Salt Lake Metro, which is the latest gay newspaper for Salt Lake City, they're featuring an article that I wrote on the law of adoption, which was the LDS practice of sealing men to men. So in this forum, that might be of interest to some of you if you want to pick that up. But mostly I wanted to say is that Jay spurred me to be a better historian. You know, instead of just letting bitterness and, you know, and bad feelings that I had with people or feeling poor me or anything, it's like he helped me realize that, you know, he, with his being Mr. Magoo and had no, you know, eyesight at all, and yet he was always optimistic about things. And I'm sitting here and I had a lot of great things going for myself, and I was just like, you know, mad at the world. And so he helped change that so that I would come out and start sharing again the things that I have to offer. And so for that, I'll always love Jay. But when I hear all your stories about him as a friend, I didn't have that. And so, but I had something else. I had something uniquely different with Jay where we could share an intellectual love for the gay community by preserving its history.
Thank you. Norma?
Thanks, Brent. I'm really honored to do this. I hadn't planned on it, but I'm Jay's cousin, and I'll tell you a little bit about our cousinness. His father was married to my aunt, who was my dad's twin sister, and she died, and he is the son of the second wife. This is really hard for me because I love Jay. My children love Jay. It didn't make any difference to us once we found out that he was gay. It was absolutely unimportant. We loved him as much then as we had always before. And I think he kind of considered me his family. The thing that really touches me today about this group is that I feel here a kindredness that you feel toward Jay that he never felt that he received from his own brothers, from his two half-brothers. This was always just something that really broke Jay's heart. I don't know if you knew that. But I'm grateful that he had you, because he felt a family here that I'm really thankful that he had. When we were going to have, when I found out a year ago that we were going to have a family reunion, the first person that I called was Jay, and told him that he would be welcome to go with us to Idaho. He was so touched by that, so thrilled that he would be involved, included in the family. But then he didn't get to do it. And so I was sad about that. But I did get to say a little bit about Jay at the family reunion. I wish the family could have known him like we did, because he was a remarkable person and a wonderful gossip.
Duane is going to share a few words.
I met Jay when Gary and Millie Watts brought him and Brent up to an affirmation devotional. That was back in 95, and since my interests are in literature and theology, philosophy, and history, one of the things I minored at the university, we struck up a quick friendship and did a lot of book reviewing together and sharing ideas, and it was around 97 I started writing a paper that Albert Peck here at Sunstone had heard I was interested in writing, and I call it The Plan, Stumbling Blocks and Stepping Stones, Creating an Inclusive... Well, I'm forgetting the whole title. It's too long anyway. But including gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgendered, and intersex peoples into the Mormon plan of salvation and exaltation. And as I started doing that and approaching the subject from history, psychology, biology, and theology, at the same time, Mel White, Protestant minister and who was involved with Metropolitan Community Church, started collecting information of what the radical right was saying about queers in the United States. And we started reading what Mel was writing, and I said, we need to be doing this same thing in our tradition so we can show people the good and the bad and the struggle. And in those discussions, I started mentioning to him that I knew Ben, and I had contact with Ben. I knew how to contact Ben. And Rocky, Connell, Donovan, and some others. And I said, there's a collection of information that we need to get. And I know Rocky, Connell, Donovan wanted it down in Berkeley or somewhere in California. And I said, it's okay if they have copies, but we need it at the University of Utah, where people can come to the center of Mormonism and study an important part of Mormon history. And it was like, that spurred him on, and the next thing I know, he said, okay, what's the email address, what's the phone number, blah, 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 and I gave him the information, and before I knew it, it was being moved up to the U. And that's how Jay was, with ideas and going, and he started providing all this information that he was collecting to help me in what I was writing. And, people have talked about the phone calls and emails, mostly phone calls, sometimes waking me up at 11 o'clock at night. And I'm in an early meeting, or had to go to work early, but he'd lose track of time with that. But I miss the phone calls. I miss, discussing all these topics that we loved to look into and criticize and compare and agree with. And he couldn't drive. So what we would do, and I don't have a car, so we'd rent a car, and I would drive, and then he would read either stuff he was writing, I was writing, or other things, and then we would sit and talk about it, or we would edit each other's work as we would drive to Moab or to Bear Lake. And he was a good friend. He was a person who we shared many interests together, and I miss him much. Thank you.
We have 3 minutes. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes. Maybe we can scan it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ralph. Ralph Martinez, for those of you who don't know me. I missed a couple of opportunities to share about Jay and didn't want to miss this opportunity. I really miss Jay. So many times it talked to me about my living situation with his ex-roommate. Most of you know that's my husband, and he would tell me how it wasn't so bad, and to hang in there. And he always, always, always left me with hope. And everything I've heard here is true. He would stare at the computer screen for like hours and talk to me about the smallest details. And I would think, doesn't this drive him crazy? I was crazy just watching it. And it was painful for my eyes. And he was so meticulous about his research and about small things. He would tell me, often we shared dinner with Jay. It was the thing we did, you know. We'd get home from work, both of us exhausted, and we'd need this other person, this spoke, you know, wheel, to just... a lot of times just dump our stuff from the day. And he'd listen, and he'd laugh. He'd always make us laugh. And I miss the humor. But I think what I miss most of all is the way that when my partner gets to that point where he just wants to choke me, he would call Jay, and I knew it. I could tell right away. I always talked to Jay because he had some resolve, and because I knew we were going to be okay. When I met Jay, Brent was living with him in Orem, and he couldn't resist when I first called the house the first few times. And first he tried to tell me that he was Brent, and I couldn't quite remember if that was the voice. And from then on, I mean, it was just an ongoing joke with this man, this wonderful, wonderful man with a great sense of humor. That's what I miss. Thanks.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you, everyone, for participating in this session.
Or you'll be CDs will suffer.